Hello and welcome to this special episode of the Yellow and Blows podcast. It's our first anniversary episode. I'm your host, Shri Pasadi, and as usual, I'm joined by co-host Venkat. Hello, Venkat. How are you?
Hey, Shri. I'm doing very well. I can't believe it's been already a year, but it's been a good ride.
Yeah, it's been a good ride. We shall spend a little bit of time, maybe at the back end of the podcast, looking through some of the highs and the lows. Not so much on a podcast, but on the journey of the Indian cricket journey we've seen in the last year since we started the podcast. But a good place to start with, I guess, for this episode of the podcast is the high of the India vs Australia second test in Farrukh Kotla or the Arun Jaitley Stadium in Delhi. 5 days, 2.5 days in the first test at Nagpur and 2.5 days in the second test. That's all it took, just 5 days to win the Border Gavaskar Trophy. Or retain the Border Gavaskar Trophy, I should say.
All it took was 5 days. Some mad cricket that was played around in those 5 days. It was, I can't say. Let me tell you this. I stopped watching the game on the third day. I didn't get up in the morning, 4 o'clock as I used to. Fearing that it would be Smith and Labuschagne kind of burying India. But I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw the scoreline. And I thought I was almost looking at a different game. That's my experience that I had given up.
I didn't give up. I actually woke up on 4 a.m. To watch. See the fun unfold, and as it got, it was completely calamitous. Calamitous batting is probably how I would put it. One session, 9 wickets. Especially after seeing Australia bat at the end of the day two.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm almost feeling, I think. The worst thing that can happen to a team is that people are feeling sorry for how they have turned up. And that's what I think is happening to... people are not disappointed, dejected, or whatever. It's not the Australia versus England kind of loss where games are close and people are battling it around and evenly matched teams. It's almost like watching a hapless team getting steamrolled. Yeah, I feel really sorry for Australia for such a, you kind of think about all the great touring sides and how they bossed around the world cricket. I mean, nobody could beat them in the noughties, as they are called, right, to 2000 to 2010. Now it's it feels a little bit chaotic. Even yeah. Under a turbulent time, yeah, I could say that.
Trying to think back, I know, there's probably been lots and lots of bits and bytes written on the internet about various mm-hmm. theories, and lots been spoken by all and sundry across podcasts, across media and etc. So from I guess there's not probably a lot more or different we can add from perspective of batting wise, cross bat shot and sweeps etc. I mean, Jadeja, for example, mentioned himself in terms of saying I wouldn't have played the sweep shot, etc.
Yeah.
Where I want to look at, I know there's been some theory about the usual that people come out with saying the stars were playing in BBL, they didn't go early enough to acclimatize and etc. I look at it and think do most visiting teams before they won come to India have this preconceived notion or got things in their mind set up to say it's going to be a challenging tour? It's almost they seem to be less looking forward to the challenges rather than thinking we're not going to make it.
Yeah, I think it was summarized beautifully by Harsha Bogle in one of his commentary. This thing, I think it echoes the sentiment that you are talking about, Trini, which was Harsha Bogle said, did Cummins lose that wicket in the batting crease, or did he lose this as soon as he started walking down that tunnel coming to the batting. I think that kind of summarizes their mental makeup, which is very, very un-Australian. There have been calls for playing hard-nosed cricket, and much was made about Smith showing thumbs up, which I think is almost a reflexive act of his, not necessarily he's having any decision-making and saying, I'm going to congratulate. I know some of the greats have commented on this, and then there was a backlash. I think when you have that, I mean, there's no brand of cricket that Australia are playing with, I think the coach and the leadership team definitely needs a rethink. I mean, we are no, kind of experts on those setups, but you can see that it is in a disarray. It requires a strong leadership. That is lacking is what I feel. And it was a bit like how after Ravi Shastri went away, and then, Rahul Dravid, did he take over? Yeah, in that transition period, India was a bit haphazard, losing some really good games that they should have won. I think if I were to summarize this, it's about the brand of cricket.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a few... It's a bit, when England came a few years ago, when we had the two-day test in Ahmedabad, the three-day test in Jaipur, etc. One of the things that we kind of kept saying with England was they are picking the team for the following test. It's almost like they're picking a team late sort of thing. That's what they were, or early in the, whichever way you look at it. You find it's just not at the batting crease that people seem to have scrambled mind entirely. I mean, the whole point about, so much was made before Australia actually embarked in India.
Yeah.
About the form that Travis Head was in. And then he come here, and then the first test, they dropped Travis Head and Matt Renshaw plays. I mean, it was like, well, hang on, all the planning and everything, Travis Head's been on form. Why would you, give Matt Renshaw the go-ahead over Travis Head? Then,
to be fair, Travis did show that he was capable of scoring runs, so he made the difference. I mean, he almost got them back into this thing. Sorry to interject. Go ahead.
I was saying, and then you go back to the second test. You come to the second test, and then you find Kugelman flies all the way out, and then he becomes the left-arm spin bowler in the second test. When Ashton Agar is already on the touring party, was here for the first test, and he's probably acclimatized. Sure, I mean, you could argue, the coaches and the captain have probably seen things in the nets around his bowling that we haven't.
Yeah.
Therefore, they've decided, actually, he's not ready to play. That may well be the case. But obviously, that's not come out in the public domain. But just looking from the outside in, it kind of feels, how can, somebody playing in the Sheffield Shield just completely fly, not acclimatized, come out a couple of days before, and then bowl, become the first choice over someone who's been already here, spent 2-3 weeks kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it sends, it does definitely demoralize people when you are performing, and you are still being overlooked, especially flying somebody from Australia when you're already having it. That doesn't, inspire confidence. I don't know, I think, I think you can say that about the Indian deep selection as well. But I think, going back to Australia for a second, I think from my point of view, their selection seems to be, as you rightly summarized, of really haphazard. And it shows that they don't have a brand of cricket. Now, Warner was injured, so he's injured now, so he's doubtful for the test. It's Pat Cummins, unfortunately, has to go back due to family reasons, and rightfully so. So it could mean that Smith is back at the helm. So I don't know how Australia would come back, but I just hope India capitalize on this and stamp their authority rather than we have that ability to bring back teams from resuscitate teams from the brink.
But
I hope that does not happen.
Yeah, no, I can't see Australia coming back. No, there is not a chance. Indore and all is again similarly like Delhi. Indore is a fortress.
Yeah.
So I and then Ahmedabad, that's another ground that, like, no, okay, it's a fairly new ground. There's not a lot of history, but I think what little test we've played there, it's, yeah, I don't see, it's almost like, because, you know, they went for the sweep in this test, and they've suddenly now they'll put up with the sweep shop sweep shot after all the comments that they've seen and etc., like criticism they've received, and like the way the innings unfolded, that's just going to go back into the locker room, barring maybe, like, you know, carry might still continue to play
because
yeah,
it is instinctive for him, I suppose. But I think the point is, I think Ashiran team would still want to play sweep shot, but be more selective about it. I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, swinging both extremes is often fraught with danger. I mean, you can't play in a turning wicket without sweep. I mean, they did play with some effect in the first game and second game as well. But barring that shot from Khwaja, which was, you know, he was doing well. I think there were glimpses of people, you know, kind of using that effectively against spin bowlers and rattling the bowling setup. But as you rightly said, it's not, I know, if I were to say something, it would be that it's not too much or too little. You know, I think they have to take a middle path with the sweep shot and use it sparingly.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge, isn't it? When your brain's kind of scrambled and you're and this happens all the time for players coming in India. Like, you lose one wicket, and then the new batter comes in and it finds it difficult, and then suddenly you've lost two wickets, and then suddenly the next three, four are like scrambling, and suddenly they haven't got that clear mind when they're coming into play. Again, time and again, you know, it's been shown, whether it's India batting or Australia batting, where if you get through that first 10, 15 balls, you know, you stay in there, it becomes easier, you can bat. But the thing is, you've got to have that focus and concentration constantly. You can't, like, you know, take your eyes off it. So yeah, quite. I think there's a few things that they obviously got, like, almost a 10-day break before. So
one of the things I wanted to ask you, Srini, is is there any part of India's strategy, or to be precise, Rohit Sharma's captaincy, that decided anything in these games, or is it just? I mean, there are games won because of the opponent's brilliance, and sometimes the, you know, kind of lackluster nature of the home team, or vice versa. Do you see any kind of change or effect of Rohit Sharma's captaincy playing a part at all in this?
No, I mean, he's got the resources in terms of bowling, like, you know, two bowlers, the spin twins, so much so, like, Akshar Patel barely got used in this test. It's fair to say, like, you know, some bits, I mean, yeah, whether it's like the last couple of wickets in the first innings when the Australian tail was batting, he brought back Shami to a ball, you know, rather than just stay on with the spinners when, you know, they could just use the long handle and etc. He brought back the seamers to, and the same thing he did probably in the first test as well. So he's kind of used his base resources as and when required. In terms of, you know, I wouldn't say he's relied on his spinners, because they've delivered it, they've done the job. He's also, it's not been like, you know, look at this, like, you know, what was it, 32 overs. So it's less than, like, you know, even an ODI innings, or still have bowled out in the second innings. The same thing, like, you know, in Nagpur as well. So he really didn't have to do, as a captain, to do much with bowling and field settings. He's just delivered his bit as a batsman. So I don't think the challenge more likely will be in terms of, you know, that one-off test when we go away for the World Test Championship, or when we go to the West Indies. that's where, you know, we'll have to look at like Rohit Sharma's captaincy or tactical brilliance and things like that. The rest, it just seems to be like, you know, things just people doing their job really, like that's pretty much it. Yeah, okay. The DRS possibly, I would say, is being measured. Is probably how I would look at it. Some, I mean, there is the obvious one, you know, the odd one where you can say like, no, he's picked up, which he shouldn't have. But actually, there's nothing that I would say like, you know, oh, that's just poor DRS that he's taken.
Yeah.
Potentially, there was the Khawaja one, which I think Jadeja bowled and LBW. That was not given, and Jadeja called for it in the first innings. It pitched marginally outside the leg stump. Could have been an umpire's call. So I wouldn't really like, you know, look at Rohit Sharma's. I'm trying to think of like, you know, really, he hasn't had to do much. You know, the only time you can argue like, you know, was that one-off test in England that he took over, you know, the remaining of the Lodi Trophy benchmark. That was the only away test, and yeah, we came a cropper there. Pass ball had just about started, like, you know, and there was no answer. So that might be the one. The other one, you know, in Bangladesh, he wasn't. It was the other two tests we played in Bangladesh. KL Rahul was captain, so he really didn't do much. ODIs and T20s, it's pretty much been the T20s at least has been Hardik Pandya show, so there hasn't been much Rahul. Rohit Sharma has to do even the one day. So I still don't think we've seen really Rohit Sharma's captaincy.
Okay. I thought as much. That's my view as well. That's why I was saying there were glimpses on his batting where he really set the tone on how to play, and he started attacking on the chase, for example, on the last test. So there are bits and pieces, as you rightly said. Some of the field set was all right, and the bowling change that you mentioned, I completely agree. I mean, bringing back a seamer for tailenders was a good, some of the field set was also, sometimes when it worked, it looked good. But otherwise, I think this test has not been a test of Rohit Sharma's captaincy.
Yeah, it's definitely not been that. I mean, we've been speaking a lot about like, you know, the Australia's failure. And fair enough, you know, especially when you think about like, you know, Australia, we're on top, you would say, at the end of day two, which is probably why we focus so much. We obviously should focus, you know, on India as well.
Yeah.
Couple of things to focus probably, especially like the lower order batting. In as much as Australia's collapse on day two was why India won it so quickly, a lot of it also goes to, like, you know, people completely forget the Akshar Patel Ashwin partnership. Significant partnership of over 100 runs. You know, India could have been clearly bundled out, and then it would have been a completely different story.
Of course. I think that is over reliance. I mean, as you rightly said, Akshar, I mean, those spin trio have not only contributed with the ball but also with the bat, and a lot of it, and so definitely should be an area of concern for India. The top order, not you can't rely on 7, 8, and 9 to do your batting and get away with it, and we have got away not now but right from the test in Australia when we won with Washington, Sundar, Snark, and Ashwin and Jadeja, and people keep coming and rescuing. That can't be the order of the day. I mean, there can be, there are, I was listening to the commentators' views, and they said, yeah, the pitch was turning and doing this, and it kind of eased out as soon as the tail came to bat. Whatever it is, I think, you know, if you are picking 5 top batters, you expect them to, you know, fire, and we have been lucky that way, that it could have been easily over this test if Akshar Patel hasn't contributed,
There's a lot of an example of that, you know, whether that Lord's test in England last year where Bumrah and Shami played, or the ones that you talked about, you know, before in Australia, where the drought, Melbourne, you know, needing Ashwin and Vihari, or then the following game with Washington Sundar and Shardul Thakur, kind of, you know, their half centuries rescuing. There's also all those bits and pieces, you know, and, you know, even going back to this particular test, whether you looked at last test, it was Akshar Patel and Jadeja's batting, and this test, it was Akshar Patel and Ashwin batting. There's been a huge, significantly huge contribution in terms of that, you know, from a perspective of rescuing us. Because if that one run, you know, deficit, the first innings was a massive difference. I mean, if when Bharat was out, India were 7 for 140-ish something. You know, yeah, they're about, I think it was 139. From there, it was a 114-run partnership for the 8th wicket.
Yeah.
So we scored for the last 3 wickets, 123 runs. Yeah, 123 runs. In fact, like, you know, if you look at, so from the 8th wicket, when Ashwin fell at 253, we were bowled for 262, literally just 9 runs added between, you know, with
Bumrah
and Siraj. If that 100 run partnership hadn't been 140 runs, even if it was just like, say, a 10-12 run partnership and that was out, together you would have had, like, you know, 100 run deficit. And even with Australia then in the second innings being bowled out for 113, they would have had over a 200 run lead.
Yeah. It was, that's it, game over. I mean, that game, I think Australia, you know, lost it when they gave that much room and then didn't fail to capitalize on an excellent start. But as you rightly said, I mean, that game, I had, you know, butterflies in the stomach, you know, when I saw Shekhar Bharat get out. Virat Kohli, of course, was unlucky. I mean, that decision is touch and go. I thought the benefit of the doubt clearly went to the batsman, especially more so now because it's heavily loaded against it, especially if the umpire gives it out. And there, however many replays that the broadcasters were telecasting, just touching on that, I think that would have made a huge difference to how, because he was looking good. But coming back to the batting, I think. Akshar Patel was like, I think sheer rescue act. That's all that is.
Yeah. So looking forward to, you know, we touched about the Australian likelihood lineups and changes, things like that. Yeah, certainly looks like David Warner will be out. Expect Pat Cummins to come back and lead the team. Possibly, I mean, Josh Hazlewood, I think it's been announced this morning that he's now out of the Test series. There's nothing been announced for Warner, you know, because obviously it was concussion, but then he also had the hairline fracture in the elbow, so I'm not sure how much they would want to risk him to play, you know, especially given the fact that the second innings, Travis had opened the innings and batted well,
yes, of course.
You would say, like, you know, Travis had can open the batting with Khawaja. That would probably be the change, you know, again, drop Matt Renshaw and, you know, move Peter Hanscombe up and bring in Cameron Green there. That literally, if that's the only change they make, you know, Cam Green for Matt Renshaw, depending on, you know, whether they want to get in Mitchell Starc or not. But even if that, then that actually almost gives, like, you know, 5 bowlers for them, rather than these 4 bowlers, and Pat Cummins can open the bowling with Cam Green, and also, like, you know, strengthens the batting. So, having said all of that, I'm not sure, like, you know, how much Cam Green in his first tour to India, he's kind of, like, you know, just going to come and save them and rescue in terms of, from a batting perspective. Just want to see.
Yeah, I think they needed some, as much as India is heavily reliant on the tail, I think they needed lower order batting. I mean, that's where they have, you know, kind of collapsed as well. Like, their tail hasn't made any runs through the series. I think that's where they would kind of want to go and do something about fixing that aspect of it.
From an Indian point of view, obviously squad's been retained as is. The only change being, like, you know, Rahul is no longer a vice captain.
which clearly says that he's not going to be selected, I think. I mean, captain and vice captain are automatic selection into the team.
Yeah.
So the moment, you know, you're saying that he's no longer the vice captain, I definitely think Shubham Gill needs to come in. I mean, the voices are growing shrill and loud and whatnot. I mean, Venkatesh Prasad kind of almost building a case against Rahul. I don't know what he's got against him. But see, sometimes we mistake, you know, facts being presented, and there's a rope that some players do get that others aren't, you know, kind of provided. So there's no consistency in terms of, it's a soft skill. It's an art, picking a team. There is no rule which says, you know, if you failed four tests and you did. I think the last dismissal, especially of Rahul, was really unlucky. But hey, I think it's also, as I rightly said, his body language, his belief for his own good, considering we have the ODI World Cup. I think we just need to make sure that he's sound. He's a far better talented player than to be facing, you know, kind of repeated failure. So yeah, Shubham Gill most likely will come. And I'm not convinced about Shreyas Iyer's selection as well. But hey, you know.
Yeah, I think, well, again, you'll go back to the same point of, like, you know, the rope that KL Rahul's been given. You know, Shreyas Iyer probably deserves the same thing in terms of...
Of course.
I mean, I think Shreyas Iyer, for me, there's no question that he's got weakness against short bowling. That probably needs to be looked at, especially if you go away from India.
Yeah.
He is going to be bounced. You know, in India, yeah, you can bounce him, but it's more likely, like, you know, the slowness of the pitch or the lack of bounce will mean, like, you know, he's got time and he's got the ability to play shots, etc. So, yeah, he could have batted better in that fourth innings and made sure, like, you know, India got home rather than throwing his wicket away. Especially after he had just hit a six there, you know, to try and go again. That's probably...
I was very disappointed with that short, Srini, seriously, because you hit a six and then, you know, the whole mantra and the dictum was to just go ahead and win. I mean, why throw your wicket away and then put pressure on Lord? I mean, even with from there, I mean, 27 not to get or something like that, it was... I was still worried because... You know, when Australia can collapse, so can India. I mean, we have all seen that when ball is keeping low and slow, and then the pressure building up. I was worried about that wicket more than anything.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I think India probably, I can only see, like, you know, barring injury or anything, that's the only replacement, you know, Shubman Gill, for KL Rahul. Coming in, you know, that probably is the one, you know, get a couple of games and probably leading into the World Test Championship. I mean, for all practical purposes, India win the next game, they are through to the World Test Championship. If they beat, well, say if, you know, probably they will beat Australia 4-0, and the odds of Sri Lanka actually winning against New Zealand 2-0, don't know, very little. For Sri Lanka to qualify, they need to win away in New Zealand 2-0. So, South Africa are out. So that's the one. So, it does look like increasingly an India-Australia. Again, in some ways, you know, the last time the World Test Championship, New Zealand actually had a couple of games they had played before they played India. So, they had, like, you know, built up, like, you know, acclimatization, all of those things. India went in cold. This time around, if Australia win, you know, they obviously come in cold. Or even if they lose, for example, it'd be interesting because right after the World Test Championship, within a week, the Ashes start. So, in some ways, Australia will acclimatize themselves. You know, they'll have an extra game to play before the Ashes. You know, usually, I think when they go in to play, come here to play the Ashes, it's like, you know, they play county games or something like that. And that's like, no, it's not the same opposition, same strength, etc. However, this time around, they'll actually have a very competitive test match with stuff riding on it before they go into the Ashes. So,
Yeah, I think Australia need to, you know, really, amp up their whatever mental self-belief and this. And with this current form, I think, especially with the form England are, it's I don't see. I mean, Ashes, in my view, is already.
Yeah, I know this thought, but I'm still like, you know, thinking. Imagine, I mean, they're not, you know, injured here and stuff, but Cam Green, Hazelwood, Stark, and Cummins, all four of them being properly fit, going
Yeah.
into the Ashes, you know, into the World Test Championship. I mean, even after all of these things, us going into the World Test Championship with all four of them fit, it won't be easy for us. It'll not be the same, you know, the way we are like beating them here. It won't be the same thing playing at Oval. Given,
Yeah.
I mean, okay, the Oval is considered one of the like, you know, flatter tracks and spin friendly tracks in England. That said, as well, it's not an Indian track, so that'll be. I know we're looking ahead, way ahead. There's still a couple more tests to play and all of those
Yeah.
things, and talk about the Ashes and things like that. But I'm just saying, like, you know, in terms of prep wise, I know England with all the basketball and everything else. I still think it is not going to be as simple as, like, you know, England will walk over, Australia will just kind of roll over. That's not how the Ashes is going to be. It is going to be a lot more competitive than a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, I think you are right. I mean, we are. I don't want to, you know, kind of digress too much or delve into how Australia and England are going to play. That's not our cup of tea. But, you know, I do believe that basketball is a double-edged sword, especially in a long test series.
Yeah, so we'll see. It'll be interesting. Yeah, it's kind of like, this is the test series. Obviously takes a break for another week, and we come back, so we'll start to look at that. And we've looked at the team. I think, as I said, the pitch will not be much different, you know, than it'll definitely offer turn in indoor. And yeah, the one change is all I see, for example, for India. So going into that, let's focus on the Indian woman.
Yeah.
They made it to the semi-final, just squeaky bum times, barely, like, you know.
It was quite a close. I mean, especially the game that just got over
Finished.
today was really close one. I think. I mean, it can say that they just still got 100 runs to chase and all, but the way they were playing, the authority of some of the shots and where they were in the game, even DLS agrees, Duckworth Lewis-Stone scoring system agrees with what it's just a 4-run difference. It's not much between the teams. India could have easily lost that game.
Yeah, rather than, like, you know, going into, like, you know, individual games, the last three games, the word is, like, since we did the last podcast, was India West Indies women's,
Yeah.
and then India England, which obviously India lost, and then India Ireland, they won two. To me, there is still something missing. You know, it feels like, you know, we are relying on one or two players to, like, you know, the team as a whole still doesn't seem to be, like, you know, performing. As you said, if you picked up today's game, you know, Smriti Mandhana scored 87, her highest individual, and that was the only thing, you know, in terms of that. There was no other major contributions. If you like, you know, Shefali Varma got 24, Jimmy at the end got like 19 off 12 balls. You know, Harmanpreet Kaur still 13 off 20 balls. Not really a T20 inning. So if you think about that way, it's just been one. Smriti Mandhana was the only contributor,
Yeah.
so not really. And clearly, like, you know, in 8 overs, Ireland, like, you know, have scored 54. The bowling quite expensive. Like, you know, Deepti Sharma 1 over for 11. It was probably, like, you know, the same thing with the other game as well, for against England. Deepti Sharma went for quite a bit with 30 odd runs in 4 overs. So it, to me, it still doesn't feel like, you know, India's bowling is up to scratch and the batting is full tilt.
Yeah, of course, Srini, I have to agree. I mean, I think what's happening is they are it seems like they're just scraping through all the games. I mean, especially, the last one. But there is no concern. I mean, one of the concerns is the bowling, spin bowling, especially with Deepthi going for fair few runs. And also consistently going for fair few runs rather than anything. So that is obviously a concern. And then the batting, if they are reliant on one batter firing at all points in time, it's not partnership. It's not like, you know, you have a 20-25 contribution from the top five batters. It's reliant on one person kind of taking it through. I think if you go back to the England game as well, Richa Ghosh, if she hadn't, you know, thrown her bat and, you know, the last over didn't go for so many runs, we would have lost that match even bad than what it seems like in the scorebook. I mean, agreed, you would say lost by 10 runs or 9 runs or whatever. But really, we were up against it. You know, it would have been like a 30-40 run defeat rather than 10 run defeat. And I think India have to do a lot of introspection if they have to go ahead and win the tournament from here on.
Yeah. The thing that I found is like, you know, whether I don't know. I mean, the England game, for me, I think India still have got this mindset against England and Australia in T20s, etc. They have to get over the line once to beat them. And, you know, it's I feel it's more a mental block. Obviously, India have not qualified for the semifinals and will play Australia. And so it's more than the skills, you know. Sure, they you know, you could say Australia and England have better place. But I think India for, like, you know, have got, you know, big batting up, like, you know, Shefali Verma, Smriti Mandhana, Jimmy Rodriguez, Harman with Preet Kaur, Richa Ghosh. If you take the top five, I'm sure they can bat as well. You know, we've seen glimpses of that in terms of the various different games.
Yeah.
From a strike rate perspective. But it just seems to be like, you know, they've got to fire collectively against Australia. I don't know whether, you know, they mentally, it changes where they're trying to, like, you know, hold back and play conservatively at the beginning, not lose wickets against Australia and England. Because as you just said, like, you know, against England, the run rate was almost up to 12 in the last four overs.
Yeah.
When Richa Ghosh actually, like, you know, decided to go. You look at Smriti Mandhana there and it's like, you know, oh, she scored 52 of 41. But it just, there is something. I mean, again, Shefali Verma wasted a few deliveries, Jimmy Rodriguez wasted a few deliveries, Harman Preet, they've all, like, you know, sort of,
yeah,
that, yeah, it, well, I mean, it's Australia, is it difficult in Australia in terms of the Australian women? I mean, they are an absolute juggernaut, you know, just keep rolling on anything and anybody that comes in their way, they just destroy and keep moving. They are the only team so far in this tournament to, like, you know, win all four.
Yeah.
So with that, you know, possibly, like, you know, maybe England might win, you know, their fourth game, which is tomorrow against Pakistan. Probably they will. So which means England will also have won their four games. But as it stands, you know, at this point in time, Australia the only one that's won. Everybody else is, like, lost at least one game. In India's case, it was only England. I mean, and I think that's probably something we said even before when we did the podcast preview, to say, like,
yeah,
it is going to be the India versus England match. So who finishes on the top? If you could beat them, it would have been easier on then having to play New Zealand. But yeah, it is what it is.
It's going to be tough. Let's put it that way. I mean, I'm not very hopeful. I'm, you know, pessimistic and all that, but I'm not very hopeful of, with the Indians playing in the current form, I'm not very hopeful. But if they raise their game and come together as a team, especially in the bowling, and fielding has been all right, I have to say that's high, especially, you know, some of the catching and ground fielding has been fantastic. But definitely as a batting unit, they need 20-30s from different batters rather than one person taking them to 70s and 60s.
Yeah, so we'll see how how that goes. When is the semifinal? I think it's on Thursday next week. It's a week on Thursday. Oh, no, it's actually this Thursday. It's on the 20th. I'm not sure whether India play on the 24th or the 25th in terms of like the two semifinals. I guess the first one will be the 24th, I think, because India and Australia both finished, you know, because England only finish tomorrow. They probably won't be playing Thursday. That's my guess, you know. I'm not sure around that. Look forward to that one. In moving on, kind of in other news, again, as you said, like, you know, this being a CSK and an India podcast, you know, the IPL schedule has been announced. CSK's first game is going to be against Gujarat Titans. The schedule for this year has been announced. I think it's starting on the 31st of March. Yeah, yes. Just about a month away. So the first game on the 31st of March. The good thing is, obviously, everybody is playing at their home grounds this year. So we're returning to some kind of normalcy, which means there'll be a fair few games for us at the Chepauk. Potentially, MS Dhoni's last season and, you know, at the Chepauk.
Yeah, I think, especially given the result that we've had in the last season, I sincerely hope. I know MS Dhoni has done a lot of great things. Definitely not taking any credit from him. He's been by far the best IPL captain and, really carried Chennai on his shoulders for all these, I think, more than a decade now. But I do think now is the time to, you know, kind of look at a change of guard. Jadeja was touted to be and then didn't happen. So I think there's a lot more riding this season on how the transition happens from his leadership to, I'm saying as though he's announced his IPL retirement, but really, I think it's this is the time.
Yeah, I think I definitely will be, like, I think he's already said this will be the last time. And the 14th of May, which is the last game at home, obviously, if you qualify for the playoffs, I'm not sure if the playoff venues have been announced yet. They probably would have been, isn't it? But yeah, so that's. Let's have a quick look to see where the playoffs are or if the venues have been announced. Well, the playoff venues have not been announced, but they will probably be. If you make the playoffs and, you know, if any of the playoffs in Chennai, if not, 14th of May will be the game when CSK play at home. I mean, obviously, there's another away game in Delhi on the 20th of May. But at home, that the last time it's played, like, you know, in front of the home fans will be on the 14th of May, Sunday. So that will be the, like, last game for him.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the tournament. We'll obviously delve into it, you know, as we get closer after the Test series. Couple of other things to obviously talk about is, like, you know, in terms of CSK, is the fact that, you know, we've lost another player this season.
Kyle Jameson.
Yeah, Kyle Jameson. He's obviously going to be missing from a stress fracture. Not quite sure who to go for. I mean, there's a couple of options I think being mentioned is Chris Jordan or Adam Mill. Chris Jordan's obviously played for us before.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of options, you know, we could potentially look at from a pace perspective as an overseas. Just trying to think of, like, you know, anybody from the current English team, T20 specialist, or someone that Steve Fleming's aware from either the 100 or
I think that's what it would be. I think they might get a surprise. They do have those talent pools and scouts going around. I don't think. I mean, of course, Chris Jordan would be a great addition, but he's gone for a fair few rounds.
Yeah,
in the last couple of T20 series that I've watched. This could be completely biased because I've just watched him play in one of those the odd BBL games or the million zillion T20 leagues, and I do remember the last two or three times I watched him bowl, he has struggled and went for fair few runs.
Yeah, the thing will be because you're playing a lot of the games at home in Chennai.
Yeah,
you want a spinner rather than because you really need the pace bowler probably when you go to away locations. At home, if home is to be a fortress, it's more. If history is anything to go by, it's more likely to be like a spin friendly that Dhoni puts in and squeezes people in.
Yeah,
that's probably more. Potentially both Moeen Ali and Mitchell Santner, can play. And we also got obviously Mahesh Deekshana. So there's three spinners, overseas spinners, if you like. If Ravindra Jadeja is playing, you're probably not going to play Mitchell Santner. You would play one of Moeen. For me, yeah, Moeen Ali and Ravindra Jadeja from a spin perspective. That's a guaranteed it was possibly Mahesh Deekshana. So that's the way I look at it. I mean, again, we'll probably have a look at it more closely as we go on. And I'm hoping to look at, I think when you picked up Rajwardhan Hangargirkar saying this year as a medium pacer. So yeah, all of those to look forward to the IPL coming ahead in a month's time. Before we finish this episode, I think we said right at the beginning, I said it's our first anniversary. So I thought what we could do is not so much what we've done on the podcast, but some of the highs and lows India and
cricketing memories. Yeah,
in the last year that we've covered, obviously, starting on the low side, you can go on the highs if you like, or you can. Share if you want. I mean, for me, it's CSK finishing at the bottom, but they were fighting at the bottom of the table with Mumbai Indians, who managed to end up taking the wooden spoon. So the IPL last year was a complete write-off for all sorts of things. Ravindra Jadeja getting captaincy, being dropped in between the captaincy, and Madel Dhoni picking up. It just went completely pear-shaped. It's almost a write-off. That probably from a CSK coverage perspective for us, that was definitely the low light.
Of course, by a country mile. I mean, there's so much drama, politics. I mean, we've seen that in the Suresh Raina episode and how he was treated and all that, without going into too much detail of who exactly was even at the wrong. I think from the sheer drama value perspective, I think last year this IPL thing, takes the cake, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, picking on the highlight, on the CSK one for me would have been Ben Stokes in the auction, getting Ben Stokes in the auction.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the highlights of last year. For India, India obviously quite a bit. We were there for the WTC finals in Southampton. Not the best day. Well, I suppose we had a good day in general, not necessarily the overall result.
I remember that we were so doubtful whether the game would even go on because of the weather, really inclement weather. I remember, is it really going to be anything worth that what we paid? that was a good memory, cricketing memory, and watching cricketers up close. I think that was good, but Conway really worried us.
The other side, obviously, was the one-off test or continuation of the Crowdy series. A lot had changed since the previous series to this series. Change in Indian captain, change in the English captain, coach. Change of coaches at both ends, philosophy changes.
Philosophy change in approach, change in everything.
It's completely India were properly buzzballed. on in that
one off. I love to hate that word, but
yeah, I'm sure like, you know, Brandon McCullum doesn't like it as well, but yeah. What else did we do? Oh, away to Australia playing the World T20.
Yeah.
That was another low light.
Yeah. The good thing, the highlight was Kohli, of course, coming back into, you know, getting back into form. The low light was us not going and carrying it on to do anything significant. So.
That 100 in the Asia Cup, bringing him back into form. Kohli coming back and scoring, shed lots of hundreds. Like, you know, it took the first time was took 3 years, then the next one took like 3 months, and then I think the next one was 3 weeks or something, 3 days and three months.
Yeah, exactly. That was a really good comeback and good for India, especially given how this year is going to pan out in terms of cricketing schedule.
Yeah, so that was good. Quite a bit of like, you know. But obviously, we're also interested in kind of, you know, from our listeners to give us feedback or like let us know what they enjoyed on our podcast over the last year. You know, and thank you so much for all those listeners who listen to us. And as usual, as we say, like, you know, things that you think we could improve, we'll definitely look at, like, you know, getting better as the years go by. And yeah, thank you for all the support for all those listeners that have listened in the last year. The usual request from us is like, you know, if you like us, do subscribe to us, leave your ratings, comments, whatever, on whichever platform you download it from, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We are on Twitter. Say hello to us on Twitter. Until the next time, you know, have a good day and enjoy. We'll speak to you soon, and hopefully this podcast continues for years to come and you like the sound of it. That's goodbye from me and Venkat. Goodbye.